In this session on raising teens at Glenwood Community Church here in the second hour, the first thing we'll be looking at is five keys to allowing your teenagers to get into trouble. And what I find, one of the most frustrating thing I find with parents of teenagers is that many of them check out. In other words, they quit parenting before their job is done. And they become what I call distracted parents. And so these are five mistakes distracted parents make when it comes to their teenagers. And then we will look next at disciplining teenagers, since it is my conviction, and I hope to establish this from the Word of God, that the rod is not used during the teenage years. That the Bible teaches that there is no use, that the rod has no use during the teenage years and older. So let's first start and look at the five necessary ingredients for your teen to get in trouble. Remembering that in the other six sessions, we've laid a biblical foundation, and we're going to, as each session went along, look at more and more pragmatic applications. So if you're listening to this on the church's website or off our website or from the DVD that we'll be supplying the church, and you're saying, this guy never quotes any Bible verses, well, this is number eight, lecture number eight, where we began with the doctrinal foundation. So I'd encourage you, if you're listening to this, to go back and listen to all eight. Five necessary ingredients. The first is anonymity. Anonymity. The key in our culture for anonymity is a car. So if you want your teens to be anonymous, give them a car. I always tell people, remember, we're all on each other's side. If you're driving past the mall or the subway or the strip center where the GameStop is or wherever teens hang out, the music store, and you see one of the children of one of your brothers and sisters of Christ in church smoking, what should you do? You should do two things. You should slow down and roll down your window and say, Hezekiah, hi. Yeah, it's me. It's Mrs. Dorcas. Hope to see you in church Sunday. Say hi to your mom and dad for me, okay? And then you should immediately call the mom or the father and tell them. Now, if you receive a phone call from a member of the church saying that your child was smoking, you should not get mad. You should be thankful. You're praying. One of the things you should be praying in your regular prayer time, and if you're taking notes, I would encourage you to jot this down. One of the things you should pray in your regular prayer time is that if your teen is about to get in trouble through indiscreet behavior or association, that God would reveal it to you early. And that won't be, usually that won't be an epiphany. Usually it will be a teacher or a friend reporting to you. So one of the rules of thumb Eleanor and I did is we never resented teachers, Sunday school teachers, pastors, friends, neighbors reporting bad behavior of our children. We just don't resent that. Now it hurts, doesn't it? You don't like it. Hurts your pride. You're disappointed. But you shouldn't be angry. You should be thankful that you're giving that information and that you can save your child. So we're all on each other's side. We're all on each other's side. But a child does need anonymity. Your child knows that if they hang around in the church parking lot and smoke and drink a bottle of beer or hang out with the wrong crowd, they're liable to get caught, don't they? They also know if it's within walking distance of the church, if it's somewhere here in Glenwood, they're liable to get caught, aren't they? But if your child has unrestricted access to a car, they can get over to Omaha, they can get over to Council Bluffs, they can get out to a park somewhere or hang out in the country where teens hang out where no one will see them, won't they? Now, I'm a missionary, and I don't travel without my wife. And one of the reasons I don't is one of the great dangers of missionaries is the anonymity they experience. Because with anonymity comes a false sense of moral security. David had all of his troops and his leaders and his support system out on the battlefield, and he was back there anonymous in the ghost town, virtually, wasn't he? The palace was like a ghost town. Everybody was out to war. But David, in his anonymity, fell into adultery. So I don't travel alone. Eleanor is always by my side, besides the fact that she's called by God to be my helpmate, and your wife can't be your helpmate if you don't let her help you. Right? Just like your brothers and sisters in Christ can't be helpers if you don't let them help you. So I want Eleanor to help me. Not just help me as in doing secretarial things and stuff like that. She teaches. And not just in teaches, but she'll make comments. She'll warn me. She'll say, you know, look out for this situation, or I'm concerned. She has a great deal of discernment. I really rely on Eleanor. So anonymity is a danger. So we don't give our children anonymity. If you are prosperous enough to have a card that's available for your children, I would caution you strongly about not giving your teenager his or her own car. What we had was a family car, and the keys were in a little Tupperware dish or a little butter dish along with the cell phone. And those could be checked out, but checked back in. If your child needs a cell phone for a purpose, he can check out his cell phone. We'll be talking about that. If he needs a car, he can check out the car. And this is how it goes. Dad, I'm going to be taking off. Where are you going? Out? When you go? Who are you going with? Friends? Where are you coming back? Later? No, that's not how it works, is it? Dad, where are you going? I'll be going out. Where are you going, son? Out? No. Where specifically? We're going to the mall. Well, wait a second. You know you're not allowed to hang out at the mall. That's just not an option. So, so are you going to buy? Well, I need a shirt. Now wait a second. Come back here. Who are you going with? Oh, friends. Who are you going with? Tommy Jones. No. I've told you. Tommy doesn't get in our car. You don't hang out with Tommy Jones. Sorry. Yeah. So, and when were you planning to be back? Oh, I don't know, Dad. Just sometime. School night. Or church night. You know, church is tomorrow morning. No, let's see your school book. What kind of homework did you have due for this weekend? What kind of work did you have? You know, and then no, I'm sorry. Not this time. Not to the ball. Not with Tommy Jones. Not out late. Not when we have to be alert for church in the morning or we have to be alert for school in the morning. Sometimes you'll say yes, but you can say no. You don't give our children anonymity. A room with a closed door, keep out policy. I know I'm in some people's homes and their children have their own room and they've got Hezekiah's door room, keep out. You know, and they've got, a skull and crossbones on the door, you know, and lightning bolts on the door and, you know, offensive things on the door. And just keep out. This is my door. Don't come in. And that's not true. Now, when your children are dressing and need the door shut for modesty, they can have their door shut. But otherwise, no. The door should be open. What are they doing in their room that they can't be doing in the living room or the playroom? Why does the door need to be shut? A room with a phone in it or a personal cell phone. Huh? Yeah, I would really caution against that. I would really caution against that. Now, I don't know how many times I'm at a dinner table and the kids are texting and the dad will say, "What are you doing?" I say, "Oh, I'm checking on my homework." Well, actually, he's receiving pictures of his girlfriend in her underwear. He's giving the word on where the keg has been stashed on the edge of town where everybody's meeting after the ball game. Or worse. Or it might be the homework, but you don't know, do you? Okay? So if your son has access to a cell phone, then you should be scrolling through and looking at the texts that come in to him and the pictures every evening when you get home from work. You should. while your son's in the home. But it shouldn't be his cell phone anyways. It should be a family cell phone, which is why you have access to that. And if he has a laptop, which he shouldn't have, or his own computer, which he shouldn't have, that should be a family one, you should hit that button and have it drop down and see all the websites that's been visited. And from Focus on the Family or a number of family-oriented organizations, you can put a program on his laptop and his iPad that will send you a text or an email of every website that's visited real time on that computer or laptop. And you should know about that. You should know about that. In fact, we live in a texting society. Sweetheart, can I give these to you to pass on, please? We live in a texting society. Eleanor and I will go into our famous restaurant, and there'll be a wait, and people will be sitting around there waiting, and people our age will be talking to each other. What will people my children's age be doing? The women will be doing one thing, the men will be doing another. What will they? These go to the men, if that's all right, huh? What will the men be? What will the women be doing? The women will be texting. What will the men be doing? Men will be watching over at the bar or somewhere in the waiting room. There's a sport event on. Right? So we live in a texting society. So for you gentlemen, I have 31 texts for your wife. But I would encourage you to, your children live by text messages. I would encourage you to regularly be texting your children. But also, I would encourage you to check their texts. I had a friend who was at a seminar for ministering to teens, and they said, before you come to the seminar, I want you to call your teen leaders and leave a message for them on the phone and send them an email. And when they got in back, when they got all together, it was a room about this big, he said, okay, how many people have heard from the teen leaders? And only about 20% had heard back. They said, right now, I want everybody to send a text to all your teen leaders saying, let me hear from you. I have something for you. And if your phone's on. And then they sent that. And he said, before that hour session was over, they had heard back from all the, you could hear the little bing, zzz, bong, bong, doo-doo, ba-doo, all over the room. They were immediately texting them back. So we live in a texting culture, but you guys need to be on top of that. Fathers, you need to be on top of that. And your children do not need a computer or a TV in their room. It's hard enough, gentlemen, for you guys not to look at pornography or soft porn. Don't expect your sons not to be able to do that. Your TV or the computer should be in a family room that's visible to everybody. And you gentlemen should not be looking at stuff on the computer where you have to hit the minimize button every time your wife or your kids come into the room. And neither should your children. If you walk in there and you're, all of a sudden that screen disappears and the wallpaper shows up, then I would stop and wonder what you're doing. Oh, I was doing some homework. Well, wait a second. Let me see. And just take that mouse and maximize that site again. See what's going on. So your children don't need that. Do you know what your children don't need those things? Do you know what they do need? An involved father who will help them maintain their testimony and purity and grades and be on the road to success in life. That's what they need. But they don't have to have these other things. My son was executive officer in the Air Force ROTC at University of Texas, and I was in the room with cadets in there one time. I was dropping by, was speaking at a church in Austin. I would always come by and see him. And they had a big whiteboard in the commander's office, and it had, all the different flight commanders and stuff like that. And under their names, it had dorm room or address, phone number, cell phone, da, 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 da. And under my son's name, where it said cell phone, somebody had written, Lieutenant Mann doesn't even have a TV. That's what they were. Because I didn't supply him with a TV for his dorm room because he doesn't need it. And I didn't supply him with a computer in his dorm room because there is, in every dorm at University of Texas, there is a big room with a whole bank of computers down there. But that's public use. So why would he need a TV and a computer and a DVD in his room where he can be exposed to questionable things? The Bible says, don't give the devil an opportunity. So why would we do that? The second thing, so first thing they need is anonymity. They need to be someplace where they can sin and nobody knows about it. So if you want to tempt them beyond their power to resist, provide them regularly with an anonymity. Give them a car, give them a room with a closed door, give them an iPhone, give them an iPad, give them a laptop in their room, give them a TV in their room, and don't ever ask them any questions or check on them. Okay? Ignorance is bliss. Second thing children need to get into trouble, teenagers, is money. Okay? Now, a credit card is great. Having a credit card where your parents don't check the statement, that's great. Children don't need credit cards. Unrestricted access to money. Your teens don't need that. Now, when your teens are out knocking around in Omaha or in Council Bluffs or in Glenwood, they go out into a store, they'll just hand them a pack of cigarettes, won't they? Isn't that what happens? Don't they just hand them a pack of cigarettes? Yeah, go ahead. It's free. Is that what happens? And they'll just hand them a bottle of vodka. Isn't that right, Mark, here in Glenwood? You're going to... Yeah, just free. And beer, free. Beer's free. Vodka, no problem. All right. They just give that stuff away, don't they? No, they have to have money to buy it, don't they? And there's no group of people more selfish than the bad kids at school or in your community. They're just selfish. So your kids don't need a lot of discretionary money that you don't know where it's going. And if they're making some serious money at work, then we would have a savings account for them that would be signed with Eleanor's or my name and their name. So money could go in there but can't come out with our knowledge, because that money is going towards college or the purchase of their car when they sign up for the military or their toolkit when they go to technical school to become a welder or a plumber. Or the down payment on their apartment when they move out of the home and start to work at Walmart or wherever they're going to work. Yeah. But it's not just to be blown haphazardly. That's our responsibility, is to help them prepare for leaving. So they don't need that money in that way. They don't need unrestricted and unaccountable spending habits. I need $25 for a science club. Oh, okay, great. Who's a science club sponsor? No, come on, who is it? Well, I'm not sure. Oh, okay. Well, that's all right. I can call the school. Well, no, actually, the science club hasn't really started yet, but they said when it starts that we need to all put down deposits so they can get it started. You know, that's really strange. I saw the vice principal last week in Target. You know, I think I'm gonna give Larry Watkins a call. I'm surprised that they would just have I think they said was that we should be prepared to have it, and I just don't want, I don't want the science club to fill up and me get bummed. Oh, well, now, aren't you in Bill Jenkins' chemistry class? I'll just call Bill because I don't want that. No, well, never mind that. Oh, now, wait a second. Now you want to know why they really wanted the $25, don't you? Now, it might be, I need $25 for science club. Oh, really? Who's the sponsor? Mr. Jenkins is the sponsor. And when does the club meet? After school, Tuesday. Yeah, and here's the permission slip he gave me for you to sign. He said, if you have any questions, call this phone number. Then you know it's going to be all right, don't you? And it'd be all right if I just write out a check. Who do I write it out to? Oh, he said, write it out to Glenwood High School. Okay. Now, that's the way you do it, don't you? Ask a few questions and find out where the money is going. But for sure, you don't have a relationship where you're a teenager where they just go in and open your purse and take some money out. Because that's stealing. That's stealing. Okay? So, they need anonymity and they need money, don't they? What's the next thing they need? They need free time. Now, anonymity, money, coming home from school with no work to do, no after school job, no clubs, no church activities, to an empty home. That's, I mean, you know, that's like winning a free trip to Las Vegas for the average teen. I mean, what more could you ask? What more could he ask for? He's in an empty home. No one knows he's there. He's got money. And he can do whatever he wants. So we don't want to do that, do we? When your teen walks through the door, there should be someone there. And so, now Eleanor postponed teaching for 17 years. So our children would grow up with a mother in the home. Now when our last child was in school all day and doing well, there's nothing in the Bible that says, while the house is empty, a mother has to sit around the house and eat and watch TV and wait for her children to come home from school. But she did take a job where that when they did come home from school, she would be home, and that there would be someone home with them in Thanksgiving and Christmas and holidays and spring break. That's our responsibility. Now, did we make as much money as our friends did whose wives worked career jobs? Eleanor has 2 degrees from one of the most prestigious universities in the U.S. Can teach French, Spanish. She was on her way to be a translator in the United Nations. And probably then she met up with me. Oh, so did we make as much money as our friends did? Did we live in as nice a house? No. But we did fulfill our responsibilities. Now, what we could have chosen to do is not have children. Then that wouldn't be a problem. But if you have children, then you're responsible to fulfill the responsibility for having those children. And if you don't want to do that, great, don't have them. Then you're free. And some people choose not to do that, not to have children. But if you do have children, then somebody has to be there to raise the children. Somebody, and so you have to make those hard decisions. So when your children come home, they have free time. One of the things you should do is know about their schoolwork. Now, when our kids were in school, their schoolwork wasn't on the internet, so we had a notebook that they had to bring. And when they got home from school, they would show it to Eleanor, and when they came to the evening dinner table, they would show it to me, and we would make sure they're on track for studying for their tests and doing things. If your children's grades are good enough to work, that's great. I will tell you, though, that most universities want to see extracurricular activities. So besides having good grades, our children were required to belong to 2 clubs, 1 social club and 1 academic club. That really helped them get into school. It also, we also heard a presentation at our school that the statistics show that high school students who are involved in after-school academic clubs have far less incidences of getting into problem in school. So by academic clubs, I mean French club, academic decathlon, Spanish club, chess club, student government, library volunteers, office volunteers, things like that. So then you have to drive around a lot, don't you? Taking your kids, picking your kids up from activities and stuff like that. But that's what being a parent is, right? It's having 2 jobs. I would be coming home from work, and I would be finishing 1 job, and I would be thinking about my next job. My second job was my wife and my family and what I had to do. And so if I had to make some house calls or deliveries with my first job, then I knew when I got home at night, I would have to do the same thing with my kids on my second job. But you don't complain and you don't whine. That's just life, isn't it? Just work hard. Get up and, you know, we're Christian men. We get up in the morning and we work real hard and we die first because of that, don't we? And we all die first? Yeah, and that's why. So, our wives are the weaker vessels. We protect them. We deal with them gently. We nurture them. We make the sacrifices ourselves. And they live longer. And that's a blessing we give to them. So free time. They need jobs around the house. I don't know who you guys married. I think sometimes you guys thought you were marrying a promiscuous scullery woman, a promiscuous mate. She does housework and you get guilt-free sex from her. Well, but that's not who I married. I married a Christian lady. And God didn't call her to go around cleaning bathrooms for unthankful teenagers. They can clean their own bathroom. God didn't call her to wash clothes for unthankful teenagers. We have 4 children. Monday was Becca's clothes day. Tuesday was Sam. Wednesdays was Megan's. Thursdays was Lizzie. They want to have clean clothes. They've got to get their clothes washed on that day. Because those were their clothes days. One child set the table. One child cleared the table. One child did the dishes. One dishwasher dishes. One child did the hand dishes and put them up. That was their job. They mowed the lawn. If they were using a car, they washed the car. They have jobs around the house. So when a child comes home, child has their schoolwork to do, and then they have their housework, their responsibilities around the house to do. And then you don't have TV on just all the time. TV is the enemy of reading. So if your children want to watch TV, they can ask you. You say, what do you want to watch? I don't know. No. Why do they need to have the TV on all the time? Okay? So free time. Coming home to an empty house with money, sitting around watching whatever they want to on one of the 500 cable channels you've provided them. No question, or from Netflix, or from whatever access they have to the internet, YouTube. Number 4, appearance. Your child is a bulletin board. A flashing bulletin board. Flash, flash, wherever they go. Sometimes it has a siren on it. And you know what it says? Look at my hair. Look at it. Look at my clothes. Look at them. Look at how I wear my pants and my shoes. Look at my makeup. Or my jewelry. Or my earring or my tattoo or whatever. Just look at that. Do you think if my parents were involved in my life, do you think if I had not taken control of the situation a long time ago, I could look like this? Look at me. Look at what the t-shirt, look at what it says. You know, Coors beer or, you know, some profane word or 69 or marijuana plant or, you know, some rock group that has profane words. Look at me. You can touch me. You can offer me something to smoke or to drink. You can involve me in stuff. My parents will never know. Look at me. And that's your child. That's their appearance. They're a walking bulletin board. Or they're a bulletin board that says this. Look at my hair. Do you think I would cut my hair like this? Do you really think I would? Look at my shirt. It's tucked in. Do you think I would dress like that? Look at my shoes. Look at these dorky shoes I have on. I don't have pierced ears. I don't have earring. I don't have a necklace. Look at my makeup or the lack of it. Do you think that's how I would want to live? You better watch out. My parents go shopping with me. We have sit-down meals at home. My parents know what's going on in my life. You better be careful not to touch me. You know, or to talk, or to offer me something to drink or smoke or something to do, because my parents might find out. I would approach me with caution. And that's what they do, don't they? That your child, that is exactly what your child is. Excuse me, sir. Tell me your name again.
Oh,
Peter. That's a nice shirt you have on. Why are you wearing that shirt?
I like it.
You like it? That's great. And nice pair of slacks.
Wait, did you pick those up or did you
what?
I think I did.
Yeah.
I
mocked
them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I did.
Mocked
them, picked those up.
So
a girl has. And that's why adults buy clothing. Because it's comfortable, they like it. That's not why teenagers buy clothing. Everything a teenager wears is a statement. And you've either, I'm not saying that you pick out their clothing for them, but I am saying that you moderate the statement they are allowed to make. That you help them not make poor judgment decisions and poor statements by their hair, by their clothing, by their jewelry. That you help your daughters. I see the first thing I want to compliment the praise leader at the appropriate dress that his teens or his young people had up there. I don't know how many times I've been to a church and they've had the praise group and then all the girls turn around and they leave, put their mics down, and then what do you see? What do you see? Their underwear. You know? And I think, do they have a mother? You know? Do they have a mother? So appearance, hair, clothing, jewelry, makeup, swimsuits. Prom just came by. We did not send our daughters to prom dressed like they were on their honeymoon. Now, they had a nice prom dress, but they weren't dressed like a wedding gown or a honeymoon, because they weren't. So it's very important for the father to weigh in on his daughter's appearances and the mother to weigh in on the son's appearances, because so often we are not able to think objectively about our children. So those decisions should be made together. Modesty is a Christian virtue. Now, a daughter or a son who are dressed like Amish children from the 1800s are going to be open to ridicule. And that's not good, is it? But they also don't need to be dressed like drug stars, you know, movie stars or music stars, you know, who are involved in the drug scene, or promiscuous people, do they? No matter how cute we think it is, they don't need to do that. So, appearance. You want to let them get into trouble? Let them make all those decisions with no moderating influence from mom and dad. So when Sam would go shopping or Ellen would go shopping with the kids, we would let them choose things which were appropriate. They would get to choose them, and they would be appropriate, but they would be modest. We would have some input into them. And I would tell Eleanor, sweetheart, no bra showing, no bra strap in the back, no cleavage, no thigh. I'll tell you, hon, if they come back with that, you'll be going back. You know? And Sam, no underwear showing, no beer commercials or suggestive numerology and things like that on his shirts. You know? He can dress like a young man. No chains. You know, we went to Johnny Wall's barbershop, Johnny Wall's. He gives military cut, businessman's cut, and sports cut. You know, and there are a bunch of sit there and wait for your haircut, and you can look at the Popular Mechanics or Field and Stream or, you know, a number of other news magazines. And he's got a TV on it, and it's either on Fox News or a sports station, or a Western, because he has a bunch of Western DVDs. And that's where I would take Sam to get his hair cut. And there are a bunch of men in there, standing around talking politics and sports and waiting for their businessman sports cut, you know, or military cut. I didn't take him to the Pretty Boy Hair Parlor, where buxom women in suggestive clothing flirt and rub their chests on you while they're cutting your hair, hoping to increase their tip. Now, asking you if you want to change your part, and, you know, massaging your head and talking to you. And then there are photo albums of homosexual models who are all probably already dead from AIDS. And they ask you how you want your hair cut. Which of these homosexual models do you want to emulate? So I didn't take my sons there, and I didn't go there. I didn't either. And then on the TVs, there are promiscuous rock videos showing. So my son doesn't need that, and I don't need it, and you do. You guys don't need it. So don't go to the Pretty Boy Hair Parlor. Don't do that. Don't let women rub their chests on you and wrap their arms around you while they're trying to cut and tell you how cute you are and make jokes with you and flirt with you for tips. Don't do that. Entertainment. That's the last thing. Let me ask you all something. What does the letter R mean on a DVD? What does that mean? Or a movie theater marquee? R. Okay. And what does restricted mean? What is, when something is, has R. No one under 17. Now let me ask you something. If the most evil, the most wicked, the most decadent, that segment of society which has thrown itself up against God, against the church, against morality, against convention, against everything we believe in, is actively opposed to it, desires to tear it down. If that segment of society thinks that there might be something wrong in looking at what they've produced, what is a Christian doing staring at it? Okay. Now I'm going to pick on Pastor Mark.
Mark, did you know your grandfather? Yeah, first one. Can you picture him kind of in your mind? How many women did he see in their underwear in their bedroom in his lifetime, other than his wife and maybe his daughter? Well, what would you guess? Your grandfather. As a 40-year-old man.
As a 40-year-old man?
Yeah, how many women in their underwear walking around in their bedrooms?
Yeah,
that's right. Now, what are you saying? How much all the care of your grandfather, your great grandfather? How many couples did he see in bed together? In their bedroom. How many couples did he see in bed together in a hotel room? What would you say? Your grandfather?
None. Right? That's right. None. How many people did he see passionately kissing?
How many? How many times have you sex?
Now, if you watch R-rated movies and you allow your children to watch R-rated movies, chances are they have seen hundreds of those things just in their teen years, haven't they? And that's the difference between the moral degeneration of your children's generation and your grandparents. So we don't do that, do we? So on our TV at our home, just for me, I have it set. So if it's rated R, it just comes up a blue screen. I've got that set. So you just don't do that, do you? If you have, for you, not just for your teens, guys, but for you. You just don't do that. Music, TV, internet, cell phones, parties. Now be sure and be the parent who picks up, not the one who drops off to all group activities. Because kids get in trouble when they're being when they're hanging around waiting for the parent to show up. Things reach a climax at the end of the party, at the end of the event, not at the beginning. And that way you'll know what's going on. And what we found was that the lower the moral values, the more porous the social group. So you have to help your children with that. You want your children to go to a church activity or join a school club or be involved in something wholesome, and they don't want to, so what will they say? I don't know anybody. Right? Well, that's a self-fulfilling, self-defeating statement, isn't it? How will they know people? By going. You want, your son is running a fever, you think he has strep throat, and you want him to go to the doctor. He says to you, yeah, but I don't know anybody there. And so what do you say? Oh, okay. You want him to go to the dentist. Take his dentist appointment. He says, well, Mom, I go in there. I don't know anybody there. The dentist is kind of nerdy. All those nurses are old. It's a hokey atmosphere. A bunch of women's magazines. Oh, okay. Well, you don't have to go to the dentist. That's okay. You don't have to go. Is that what you say? No, because you're his parent, and you're responsible for him, and you help him do things. Now, those are the five things you need to get him in trouble. Number six. You want him to not continue in his relationship with the church and his Christian associations when he goes to college. How do you do that? How do you guarantee that? Well, you do it through your values. See? The church has an event, and the school has an event, and you make sure he understands that school is more important. So you go to the school event. The church has an event, and there's a sporting event, and you make sure he understands that he can skip youth activities for the sporting event. He's involved in summer ball, and the church is taking a mission trip, and you make sure he understands that being involved in summer ball all the way through, as opposed to missing a week, that, of course, is more important than going on a church mission trip, don't you? The Awanas is having a special Saturday morning event, and he has a soccer team that meets on Saturday morning. You make sure that he understands that playing with a bunch of non-Christian kids on a soccer team is far more important than coming to the special Awanas team event, don't you? And you consistently, event after event, priority after priority. There's a Thursday night youth activity, and he has a big test on Friday. And so instead of getting him to be studied up for that test that's coming up, you tell him to skip the youth activity and study. Event after event, opportunity after opportunity, you, by your decisions, you choose scholastics and athletics over his church. Then when he goes away to college, he'll be in that pattern. And college priorities are school and athletics and nothing else. And he will be all ready to immerse himself in that. But don't do that. That's not what we did. In fact, I was really convicted. Sam was in playing on a baseball league. And periodically the games were on Wednesday night. And our church that I was on staff with had Wednesday night church. And it was the first game. It was a Monday night game, and I was sitting next to a man next to me, and I was telling him about this, and he said, "Well, my son will never. I don't care. My son's going to miss 50% of the games because they play on Saturday, and that's the Sabbath." This was a Jewish man. He said, "If I don't teach my son that honoring Jehovah on the Sabbath is more important than chasing a ball around in the grass, how do I ever expect him to defend Zion and his people against, you know?" And then he gave me a little talk about Israel. And I thought, hey, here is a non-Christian Jew who is placing my Bible, the Word of God, and quoting verses to me, and I'm struggling with it. So I just shared with Sam. I said, "Sam, you know, our church has always gone to church on Wednesday night, and you'll get to make your own decisions when you go away to college." Well, when Sam went away to college, he kept going to church. Now, it doesn't guarantee that. He could have become bitter, but he chose not to. But at some point, we have to help our kids with their values, don't we? We have to help our kids with their values. And if learning vocabulary words or algorithm tables or periodic tables is more important than scripture memory and Bible study, then your children will believe that. Now, it doesn't mean they shouldn't learn algorithm tables and periodic tables and the parts of the cell, but it also means that you approach the academic level of their Bible study with equal seriousness. Now, in closing, how do we discipline teens since we can't spank them? So let's look at Proverbs 22:7, shall we? And then I'll let y'all go. This is the easy part. I'm saying Proverbs 22:7 because I'm pretty sure that's it. Yes, thanks, baby. She is so sweet. Okay. All right. We'll take these. I'll be hollering things at you in just a second. Now, Proverbs 27, 22. Who would like to read that? Proverbs 27, 22. Okay, Debs, you want to read that for me, please? Sure.
I didn't get my glasses.
Oh, that's all right. Mark, 27, 22. He's booting it up. Steve, who can do that? 27, 22. Steve's my go-to man. Steve, when we think of our children, and we don't, and the Bible doesn't specifically say whether they should do it or not, and we're trying to what is the template, since it's not specifically commanded in the Bible? What is it, Steve?
Their success.
That is their success, Proverbs 6:3. We say, how will this behavior translate into their success or lack of it? Okay, great. Proverbs 27:22. Yeah, and they transliterated that to grind because it makes more sense, because the mortar and pestles we think of are the pharmacy ones, the little ones. But the Hebrew word there is literally pound, because like in Nigeria or in Zambia, you eat pounded yam, and they have these giant mortars. They're hollow. They're made from. They're carved out of a big tree trunk, and they have pestles that are about 4.5-5 feet tall, and the ladies pound those yams all day to get them ready, or pound the wheat. So if you take a foolish man, not a child, and you throw him in with that, and you pound him all day, at the end of the day, will his foolishness have left him, Steve? No. Foolishness, if it's bound up in the heart of a child, that would be a child, younger than a teenager. The rod is of value. Once a child is no longer a child, once they're a teenager or older, it's of no value. Why? I don't know. Sacrificing cows and sheep and lambs was of great value 3,000 years ago. Today, it's of no value. Well, that's because God says so. Now it's Jesus, now it's not cows. I just accept that. So, things change with time. And that's one of the things. We don't spank teenagers. So, can we all agree that with a teenager, or when the child has reached puberty, can we all agree that it's inappropriate when our son or daughter who's reached puberty to go into the bathroom while they're showering or bathe them? Can we all agree that that's inappropriate? Isn't that right? Is that true with a two-year-old? No. But it is true if they've entered puberty. So can we all agree that it's inappropriate to have a child who's a teenager who has entered puberty sleeping in our bed? Can we all agree that that's inappropriate? Should not happen. We all agree on that. Okay. Can we all agree that it's inappropriate and should not happen that we should be dressing our teenagers or our child who's entered puberty? Can we all agree that a father shouldn't go in there, help his daughters put on their underwear and get them dressed? Can we all agree on that? Can we all agree that when our daughters are teenagers or have entered puberty, it's inappropriate for a father to be spanking them on their bottom, especially during their period? Can we all agree that that's inappropriate? Can we all agree that once the son is entering manhood and he's experienced puberty, that it's inappropriate for his mother to be doing anything with his bottom, including spanking it? Can we all agree with that? So it's appropriate and inappropriate behavior. Now, when I greet Debs, we haven't seen each other for a while. I gave her a little side hug. Does anybody have any problem with that? Can we all agree it would be inappropriate for Mark to come into the house and find Debs sitting on my lap? Can we all agree that that's inappropriate? Can we all agree, gentlemen and moms, that we have to begin changing our behavior, not our affection, but our behavior with our children as they draw near to puberty? Can we all agree on that? See? And so spanking ends. No more spanking. Finished. Done. Gone. So, what do we do? Number one, Eleanor and I had a descending list. Number one. First they get was, what do they dislike? So if my children were disrespectful to Eleanor, or they came in late, or they didn't do a chore, or they talked back, or any number of the things which would precipitate discipline. If it was Sam, and I said, okay, Sam, great, you can go out and weed the garden. Well, he wouldn't especially like to spend Saturday afternoon weeding the garden, would he? But he would take off his shirt, he would get some sun, he'd be all sweaty, he'd be in there pulling things up, he'd find he'd have a can, he'd be putting worms in it because he likes to fish, he might find a turtle, he could show it to one of his little sisters, he'd set that aside, that's pretty cool, he'd want to show that to some of the guys on the baseball team, might kill a snake, that'd be pretty cool, and then he'd be in there, there might be some wasps and spiders in there that he would kill. Might get a few ant bites, but, you know, I mean, it wouldn't be his favorite thing. And then when his friends came by to see him, you know, they'd say, man, what are you doing? He said, well, I got in trouble. I talked back to my dad. I got to work today. Okay, well, we're all going to go to baseball practice early. He said, well, you know, I'll catch up. I'll be through in time for a baseball practice. Okay, but let me show you the school turtle I found. Yeah, what's in the can? Worms. Oh, great, we go fishing tonight. That's right, I'll have them ready. Okay, see you, Sam. So it wouldn't be his favorite thing, but it wouldn't be a killer, would it? But my daughter, one of my daughters doing that, they would hate that, wouldn't they? And when their friends came over, what are you doing? And, oh, you know, we're all going over to Connie's house, and her mom's taking us to Kohl's, and we're going shopping. Then we're going to go to Starbucks, and look, oh, man, oh, man, ah, look. And she says, what's worse, there are worms in here. Ah, and I found the turtle. Ah, well, we'll see you. And it'd be, you know, her hair's got a bandana, and she's all sweaty. She wouldn't like that, would she? But do young ladies need to learn how to work in the garden? They do, don't they? So it's not punitive, but it's not something they like. So there you go. On the other hand, if Sam had to work in the kitchen with his mom and clean the floor, get all under the baseboards, get the stove all clean, get the oven clean, maybe mop and wax the floor and get that looking perfect, and his friends came over to play baseball with him, now he wouldn't like that, would he? And he especially wouldn't like to spend the Saturday cleaning the kitchen. But do young men need to learn how to do that? So it's not punitive, is it? He needs to learn how to do it. But we had a list of things, and a mental list of things that they didn't like to do. I had a missionary who came to talk to us, and they said, our daughter is saying, I hate you. And I said, they had three sons. And I said, I think you should make October I hate you month. And every time she says, I hate you, make her clean all the toilets. And it worked. In fact, I was over there around Thanksgiving and I said, Dorcas, what you been doing? And she said, I've been cleaning toilets, Reverend Mayan. So evidently I got partial credit for that. Okay, what they dislike. Number two, what you dislike. Eleanor had a list of things that needed to be done around the house that she was going to have to do that she didn't particularly want to do or like to do, as did I. In fact, I remember saying to Eleanor one time, you know, the car really needs to be washed and waxed. I hope Sam loses his temper before the week's up. She kind of went, oh, no, don't say that. And I said, well, yeah. And he didn't, by the way. Okay, number three, privileges. And this is the last thing people forget. People forget that the room, the TV, the car, all these things are privileges. So it would always be one of these plus the TV. That would be first. And y'all can fold the computer and the iPad into that. And then it can be other things. I had a pastor friend whose daughter was always slamming the door to her room and then shouting through the door. So he just took the door off the hinge and told her, when you can behave properly, I'll put the door back on. You can change your clothes and do the private things in the bathroom. Well, I would never do that, but that door doesn't belong to her. And the car doesn't belong to her. And the TV, there's nothing in the refrigerator that belongs to your children. And you forget that. You begin thinking of it as family, but it's not. It's yours. And why should anyone be thankful for anything if they consider it just their privilege to take it? Don't we live in an entitlement society? Do you get the feeling in our society that the people who are on welfare really appreciate the fact that about a quarter to a third of your hard-earned money that you could be spending on your children goes to them? Do you get the feeling that they appreciate that? But why should they? It's just given to them, right? Well, don't create an entitlement culture in your teenagers. Why should they be thankful? It's their phone, it's their car, it's their room, it's their TV, it's their refrigerator, it's their cupboard, it's their clothes. They can get it anytime they want to. They don't have to ask about it. In fact, that's more convenient for you because then you don't have to come home. Well, that's not what we want to do, is it? Well, I hope these practical things, if you don't want to do them personally, I hope that they make you think of something else that would be helpful for you to do. Lord, we thank you for this time together. Bless our families. In Christ's name we pray, amen.